back. Welcome to No Direction, the Pathfinder News Reviews and Interviews podcast. I'm your host, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and I'm joined by...
I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
And I'm Luis Loza.
And today we have two very special guests joining us on the podcast to talk about something that I was excited and laughing giddily about ever since I got told it was coming. And that is, of course, Queer Finder Magazine. Welcome to the show, two of the people behind Queer Finder, Grady Wang and Theo Thorson. Hey, y'all.
Hey, thank you for having us.
So Hi. For anybody who doesn't know, could you give us the 30-second elevator pitch? What is Queer Finder Magazine?
So Queer Finder is themed as an in-world travel magazine published in Galarian. And it's just focused on adding all sorts of queer content from, you know, fiction to more mechanical things like NPCs and stat blocks and items and also like location settings that you can drop in, like in the case of the first issue, kind of focusing more on queer bars and, you know, kind of safe places and things like that. And yeah, we tried to pull together a lot of the queer creators and allies in the industry as well to kind of just help them tell the stories that they want to share.
Now, you have a humongous team for what is essentially a third-party Pathfinder Infinite product. How did you get so many people together for this?
How did we do that?
Is it a huge
team? I mean, there's a multiple pages on your credits page.
It's got the most epic credits page I've ever seen in a product.
And we had to split it into two issues because we had too many people and too many...
Yeah, there's a lot of the folks are not actually... Well, they're in the special section. But no, I mean, like, I think part of it was just that the same way that the community was really excited and warmly received it, I think the creative community kind of had a similar reaction. So kind of when we pitched it, to folks, everyone was just very enthusiastic about it to begin with. We are also, it probably doesn't hurt that we are offering upfront pay for our creative team as well. So, and that was always our goal, that because we knew Pathfinder Infinite was a little bit of an unknown market at the time, and some of the other community content sites that won't go unnamed, I guess, don't always perform super well either. And so, you know, we didn't want folks, you know, doing a lot of work for us for not a lot of return. And so we really felt like it was important to support our community, especially those in underrepresented, you know, demographics. And so we pay our writers 15 cents a word. We pay for the, you know, a non-exclusive commercial license from artists. Going forward, we're kind of formalizing our editorial process as well. So we'll be having a dev edit pass on the first and second drafts, and then a proofreading pass after the layout is done as well. And we're doing 10 cents for the dev editing and 3 cents for proofreading. So trying to pay very competitive rates for the industry as well, and try to kind of just raise that bar.
Now, what got you to decide to create a queer Pathfinder magazine? Like, how did you get to that point?
I think, maybe go into this one. I think that the impetus came when they made the announcement of Pathfinder Infinite, and our friend Aaron Shanks tweeted out, like, I really hope somebody comes out with like a gay guide to Absalom. And we're like, And we kind of took that idea and just blew it up. And I think that's kind of where the first spark came from.
I was going to ask if Aaron's tweet had anything to do with this. I'm so excited to see that.
Thank you today. I need to go back and find that original tweet and respond to it. Like, here you go. You ask and you receive. But yeah, I think that's kind of where the initial idea came from. We're like, oh, that's a cool idea. And then we also saw that, like, the Out Traveler magazine, or whatever it's called.
Yeah, they just relaunched their physical recently.
Yeah, so I forget what the name of the magazine is now.
Yeah, Out Traveler.
Out Traveler, yeah. So it's like, oh, that they're kind of bringing these kind of things back, these gay travel magazines. And it's kind of a great time to kind of, it'd be cool to have an in-world version. We just kind of, we're looking through Entertainment Weeklies and all the editorials, and we're like, kind of really excited about it. And that's kind of where it came from.
So why the decision to make it an in-world magazine as opposed to an out-of-character magazine?
It just seemed more fun.
More fun.
I mean, it's in the name of like role-playing game, right? And so I think like just being able to do that. And I think we kind of walked the line a little bit on that, because like there's a lot of parts where it reads very clearly as kind of a more standard supplement. But I know like one of the better received, I think, articles, or at least one that we heard a bit of chatter about online, was Harpy Holidays by Jessica Markram. And that one, in the byline, you see is credited to the Dr. Whiskers, the Sherpod, and is a catfolk anthropologist who she is more, she has a higher opinion of herself than maybe most other people will have of her. and so the whole article, which is all about kind of like a holiday caroling tradition of the Harpy Portos Mount, but is written very much in character, in person, as that cat folk. And I think it was fantastic. And so I think having a mix of that sort of content is good as well. But that was definitely something that was very fun. I think that's inspired some of our other authors to kind of lean more in that direction as well going forward. So yeah, I think it was something that could be, you know, being able to do it in a magazine style and all that, we could get very, have a lot of fun with the design and with the articles and all that. And we thought, you know, why not just run with it?
And I really love your article that you wrote. That is an interview between, sunflower.
Yeah. So we have like a sunflower leshy gossip columnist year round light. And she's just very enthusiastic and supportive, like overly so. But yeah, like her thing as a gossip columnist is just that, you know, she gets the gossip so that she can learn more about people and support them. So it's kind of like a little bit inverting your expectations of about gossip. But yeah, and so we had kind of her interview Grissel Vanderip Jr., which was the character that Michelle Wynn Bradley played in the Troubles of Notari, actual play for Paizo. And yeah, again, Michelle was kind enough that when we reached out to her, she was like, oh yeah, that's so cool. Like, maybe I can just revisit that character. And we were like, who owns the rights to that character? Because, you know, Pathfinder is in it. And yeah. Poor Michelle, I think she went through like a 3-week back and forth with Paizo to make sure everything was cleared for her to actually contribute the character to the magazine. But it all worked out. And then yeah, I just sent her these in character questions. She just rolled with it, and it was phenomenal.
Talking about her pickled fish stand that she set up in Adrom from Atari, and it's just, I love it.
Yeah, when they started talking about putting fish oil on armor, and I was like, oh yeah, this is absolutely perfect. This is exactly what I came here looking for.
It's a hair tonic. It's an armor polisher. Yeah.
So like that is an example of something that could not have happened without a program like Pathfinder Infinite that lets you play in the world's IP so closely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what made it all possible. And I'm hoping that it excites a lot of people, you know, to be able to play with all the amazing locations and characters that Paizo and you folks have created. And so, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing what else people make out of this.
I mean, do you think this would have been possible at all to make an interesting Queer Finder magazine in the old school OGL method?
But yes and no. I think we're going to be experimenting with that going forward. We're wanting to release Queer Finder in several formats, especially because there's always a certain demand to get like a hard copy of mm-hmm. products from folks when they get excited about a product. And we're hoping that Pathfinder Infinite will open that up. We understand that it's a lot for the site admins to manage. And so we understand the hesitancy to do that. But yeah, and so we were like, okay, well, yeah, it'd be cool to have a physical magazine that you could have and put on your coffee table. And so obviously we'll probably have to go OGL to do some of that. So I think it is possible as a product, but I think like the excitement of being able to play in Paizo's playground, especially mm-hmm. the very, you know, fleshed out and detailed world that is Galarian, was probably what drove us to do this in the first place. We probably wouldn't have done it without that. But now that it's in the world, you know, there's a lot of possibilities.
And you all really didn't pull any punches. Like right out of the bat, you hit hard with the editor's letter where the leader of the Queer Finder Society, Neva Serindi, did I get that correct? Probably not even close.
Kind of a drag name, I guess, right? Like it's kind of sound like Never Surrender, but then playing into a little bit of her Vudrian heritage a little bit.
Talks about like you read it and then the big revelation is I was born a changeling, and then that sort of like hooks, oh, there is so much more about the queer experience that can be explored in a vast deep fantasy world here, and you all really just went for it and really showed a lot of the possibilities that I mean I've never even thought about in role-playing scenarios at all. And we've been doing these queer and Galarian episodes every couple of years for about 12 years now, so it was kind of neat to see such fresh, fertile soil, such rich, fertile soil being explored in a magazine like this.
Oh, yeah, thank you. That means a lot. I think that, you know, we had a little bit of hesitancy diving into this because we're pretty new to Pathfinder. Like, we didn't really kind of get into it until second edition. And so, yeah, there was always a little bit, there was a little bit of concern that we were like, oh, it's such a detailed world that, you know, like, you know, what can we do that either hasn't been done or are we going to accidentally like wrong or inflict with something? And so, yeah, it's really, it's good to hear that, you know, we were able to kind of, have some perspectives on it that maybe haven't been repeated a lot already. Mm-hmm. And so, I would encourage, I think, anyone else who maybe has similar fears to just go ahead and dive into it anyway, because like, I think, you know, and the Pathfinder community has just been nothing but supportive. Like, I feel like it's a very like warm community, and welcoming of kind of new voices and new ideas. And so that's been, just really, really cool to experience.
And then we had, you know, veterans coming and supporting us, like one Vanessa Hoskins, who I feel like we've buried the lead here a little bit, has contributed an article to this.
Yes, I have.
That I think is super amazing and is one of the ones that you do some things that I think are very trans affirming and just amazing in there. One of my favorite articles in there. You've got the art behind you there. You
kind of see I do. Art. Hold on.
Framed by your
chair. Bit by my chair. It's on page 30 there, Param, if you want to pull that up. But yeah, I wrote an article about the Festival of Mirrors, which is a holiday I invented actually to flesh out the religion of Arshe, who's sort of the queer deity. Like, they're definitely transy, but also very very queer and like gay, homosexual forward, because it is very much like, be who you are, love who you want. You are free to do what you want to do and don't let anyone tell you otherwise. And they're just such an important deity in the setting, and they're mentioned, but they don't really get like the spotlight ever, because I think they're important for the setting, because in a polytheistic society, like, you know, like Galarian, a deity like that would certainly exist, but probably not the center of intrigue and adventure like you would see all the time. So it was really fun to explore what that religion might look like and what a winter holiday might look like for that deity.
And I love what you did with it there too, in letting people reflect on the outside how they feel on the inside, and kind of giving even mechanical ways of doing that, like a tonic they can take to show themselves as they see themselves, which I think is awesome.
And yeah, and I also kind of paired it with the idea of this reflection of, I know for a lot of trans individuals, that moment when you see your real self in the mirror and you finally look and say, yes, that's me, is such an important one. And so I wanted it, and I was thinking about like, oh, what's wintertime? And wintertime is ice, and ice is reflective. So I have this like enchanted walls of ice that come up that show yourself as like you would really, you know, you really see yourself. And you see that looking back at you. And I think that's such a wonderful moment for people to experience that sort of gender euphoria of everything. And then, of course, there's an elixir that you can take then just to transform yourself for the evening and have fun and party and not have to worry about it. And then if, you know, it's also one of those things that if you like your experience, you're like, yes, I want to do this more. Well, there's a way to make it permanent too. It's just kind of fun.
It's heartwarming.
Although I have to say, it was funny because when you approached me, I remember I don't think the idea of having this be an in-world magazine, like written by in-world people, was like being explored yet. And so I was so excited to write this. I got the assignment, I wrote it, and I sent it to you. And about a week later, I heard like, oh yeah, it's an in-world magazine. And I'm like, I didn't. Okay. So it's maybe a little out of place, but anything I write for you in the future will be more in line with you.
No, it's perfect. Yeah. And I think the other thing that is worth noting is that, you know, it's kind of like a side story, right, for your broader fictional universe on Pathfinder Infinite for Vellum and Lace.
For Vellum and Lace. Yeah, a little bit. I needed people to attend this party, and I'm like, well, why not include my original characters? Why not make it kind of a cameo for them? So I didn't name them by name, but they're in there.
Everybody loves crossovers.
Yeah, makes the whole an expanded universe. Sort of thing. I think that was super cool, and that makes it very in-world as well in a different way. So
we have the show in Bradley, and that's another thing too that I think is really cool, is a lot of the articles reference some of the same characters who are visiting different locations in there. Mm-hmm. And so you do see some crossovers, and in the future issues, in this one, we have a character that we're teasing that's going to show up a little bit more down the line to complete their story with the poppet bar.
and
the kids. And so we have some plans for the future for those stories. So
they're so cute.
Yeah. I feel like personally I missed any kind of announcement or call for like authors or anything for this. I miss like this even coming together in any capacity. So it was just a great surprise when suddenly, hey, look, guess what's out? Gravefinder, right? And it was amazing. So I'm kind of interested, what was the process like to get everyone pulled in on this, you know, not just the authors, but artists and everyone else? And then what was that collaboration process like? You know, were there people asking like, I want to do this? Or were you assigning specific things for the articles? What was that all like?
So yeah, I apologize. A lot of the secrecy was driven by my fear of rejecting people. And so
I wouldn't have tried to take any part of it. I was just like, oh, this just kind of happened out of nowhere.
We would be honored to have you contributing.
Yeah, absolutely. Or like, yeah, anyone else, you know, feel free to reach out to us. We're definitely kind of trying to expand the scope of the project now. But, you know, I've always just, you know, like, because I know that, like, at least in the past, like, the projects have put out these calls, right?
Sure.
And you can get a lot of interest in it. And especially when we're trying to pay up front, we knew that we had a certain budget that we could hit. And so we didn't want to just do this, get people excited, and then just have to say no to so many folks. And so I kind of just started out more as kind of just reaching out individual folks who I knew had expressed interest in this sort of content. And then kind of going by word of mouth of like, oh, well, who else would you recommend to bring on board? Who would be open to this sort of thing? And that was kind of how we did that, at least in terms of the writing side. For artists, it was a lot of, some of that, but also just kind of going on Twitter and searching hashtags, like kind of for Portfolio Day and searching for, you know, like queer artists and TTRPG, and just finding folks who had previously posted, you know, commissions or talked about things. And there were others that I was already following who I really loved and just hadn't had a chance to work with them yet.
Yeah, we got Mike Cadrales that's in the chat here, who is all over Pathfinder Infinite as well with their art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And with all, he does a lot of the stock art for like the gender bent gods and some of the notable NPCs in the setting and things like that. And so, yeah, for us, it was kind of just super exciting to reach out to folks who we were like, oh yeah, like we've loved your work for ages and now we get to work with you sort of thing. But I think going forward, yeah, our goal is very much to, like we said, to kind of elevate the voices and give them an opportunity to tell the stories that they want to tell. And so when we approached folks, we were kind of like, you know, it's fairly open-ended. It's going to be a magazine. We want, you know, maybe some these guidelines, but beyond that, like, pitch whatever you want. And as long as it doesn't conflict with a PG-13 rating and it isn't like exactly the same as somebody else's pitch, we'll run with it and we'll just see where it goes. And that's kind of very much how we want to continue that as well. And so, yeah, we may be able to put out kind of more of a call for the community. And we would love to be able to kind of bring in more authors, even those who are just getting started and just want an opportunity to share what they've written. We definitely hope to be able to.
I think we want to like try to find a good mix between veteran writers like you, Louise, and you, Vanessa, and then like people who are just trying to get their footing in the industry and try to kind of bring them all together for these projects in the future. And I think it's nice to have a good mix like that.
I do want to commend you for managing to get such a large talent pool together and then turning that into an absolutely stunning final product. The quality of the layout and the art and how it's used and how everything blends together, it very much sells itself as a magazine. It also sells itself as one of the best put together third-party products I have ever seen published anywhere. And so
it's really good.
So it absolutely is deserving of the hype. I mean, not just the words on the page. The words on the page are glorious. But like somebody, whoever put like, kudos to the art direction, kudos to the layout style, kudos to everything visual about this, because it absolutely slaps. And I want to pull up one of the ads. You have real ads, and you also have some in-world ads, and one in particular is absolutely my favorite, and you probably guess.
Oh. I wonder if it's my favorite.
Was that my idea, that one?
Oh my gosh, that one's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was like a last.
The ad reads, for our audience listeners, it reads, "Hey, you sexy devil, Chelyx, come for a hell of a good time. This episode is made for the sole opinion of the Chelyx Embassy in partnership with Chelyx Turin Board. Photo by Slatian from pexels.lord.gov. Also requires all tourism promotions and including following code message. Aerodynats, all your base are belong to us.
Sorry, I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was a very last minute thing that we added in.
Yeah, because I saw, especially that last line, even because I was just browsing the Absalom book, saw that, you know, they had taken over the Aridan's temple, by the cathedral, and so I'm like, oh, okay, well, we can reference that. I feel like they would do that.
Yeah, this is the first time I've read that line. I don't even remember that from when I read through it. You might have added it after I did the proofreading task. But yeah, I thought you were going to say that the beer ad, the Starstone Brewery ad in the beginning.
That one's really good too.
That's really good. Yes. Also.
It's a close second, but the Chelyx ad, I know the first time that you sent the authors on it and the artists proof copies to look through, that just stood right out to me because I'm skimming through and I'm like, wow, this looks so good. And then I saw that ad and I just had to stop and be like, okay, there's something really magical happening.
The one thing that I do want to add that we didn't get to this time that I want to do next time is just a page of classified ads. Just in just from like selling magical dust in the packet to everything else, misconnections. Like, I think we should all just contribute at least one to the next issue. I think that'd be so much fun.
And throw them all in there. I think that's a great idea. Everyone who does an article also throw a classified ad of some sort in there.
Yeah, I think it's awesome. We need to do that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I was also wanting to have like one page that was just kind of like games, like a crossword or like a maze or something. I just couldn't put one together. Crosswords are hard.
Yeah, those are hard to put together.
But especially like I was reading Absalom again, and they were talking about how like the citizens of Absalom like they love their press content and they love their puzzles and games and stuff. I was like, we should have done it.
Let's do a word find. That's kind of. We'll see what we can do next time. Maybe start working on it now and just get there. Just do our own Wordle version or something. I don't know what.
You said that there was so much that you broke it into two. You broke the magazine into two issues. Could you tell us a little bit about like how the decision making went? Because what we're dealing here is a 78 page PDF. PDFs can be infinitely long, but there aren't infinite hours in the day. So how did you decide like how long this was going to be, where the cutoffs are?
It's not over yet. It's not complete yet. I'll let you
know. It's also not complete. We're adding more content to it. We'll get to that. Okay, so
Grady doesn't do anything small. Like everything is epic and amazing. And so I'll let you go.
That's part. So scope creep is partly the problem. and a part of it was also like a budgetary thing. Like, we blew our budget. That probably doesn't come as a surprise. So when we kind of just ran the numbers, we were like, you know, like we probably need to sell it at about this price point and probably over two issues to have any chance of making it back. And then at that price point, you know, what's the value proposition there? How many pages are people going to expect? How much content? Things like that. And so that kind of drove some of the length decisions, at least. In terms of the timing, it was just a matter of we wanted to get the information out. And in some case, because you know, the Pathfinder Infinite didn't launch that long ago. And so it was like most of the creators we approached didn't have a very long lead time to work on it. And a lot of them were pretty open about like, oh, we're not going to be able to start working on this until like December at the early. And we're like, okay. And so like in some cases, it just certain things slipped. And at first we were trying to go very much more into the themes. Like the first issue was supposed to be all the bars and the second issue was supposed to be all the festivals. And then that was a lot of writing that we couldn't get done. And so at the end, we were just kind of like, okay, we have enough stuff to fill a magazine. We're just going to grab everything that's ready and let it out in the world because a lot of it is too awesome to hold on to. And that's ended up being what's in there. So I think we actually have more bars in issue two than issue one, even though issue one is the bars of Absalom. But
or too many bars.
So many bars.
Though we actually did skip one of our traditional questions here on the No Direction podcast, which is when we bring on some new interviewees, we like to ask, hey, what got you into gaming and how did that lead you to where you are now publishing games?
I think I can address this one. I think we kind of came in through board gaming and our first introduction, I guess maybe our first introduction to TTRPGs. We, you know, we played the Lords of Waterdeep game, board game. And then a buddy of mine, when I was living overseas, tried to play Dungeons and Dragons with me. And it was before we had things like, you know, online games like the, you know, the Critical Role or any of those shows to watch and see what these really look like. And so I didn't understand what I was supposed to do. And he, I don't know if he did a particularly good job of describing it. So I didn't quite get it. And it wasn't until we started seeing people play it in person. And we used to go to PAX South. And at every PAX, they would have Acquisition Incorporated. We watched them play. And so like, oh, that's kind of what it looks like. And then we started watching Harmon Quest from the guy who made Community. And we're like, oh, so that's kind of what it looks like. And then we kind of got excited about that. And once we started being able to get our wrap our minds around it, we kind of made the leap from board games into TTRPGs. And we started like really just, we got our friends together and started doing a little home game and kind of fell in love with it and fell in love with the storytelling that was involved in it. And Grady's been a writer forever. And so it was a great opportunity for him to write some of his own adventures. And I have a little bit of like acting experience in my past, like game mastering. And I like acting and I like organizing. And so planning and organizing was what the game master, I feel like. And then we had the creative mind over here. And it was, I think we made a pretty good team kind of getting started. And then we started our channel. We have a Gallant Goblin YouTube channel where we primarily talk about minis and adventures. And we need to have both of you on, Luis and Vanessa, to talk about some of the adventures you've written on there. Because I like to do interviews with the creators to kind of talk about your adventures. And you'll both write a new one like every other month. And so we have a lot to talk about.
Not nearly that fast.
Every time I turn, I'm like, oh, it's another one from Vanessa, it's another one from Luis. We did that primarily because you also have a background in movie making. And so we had all this equipment and we wanted to kind of get some experience making films and making video products. And like, why don't we just kind of do a YouTube thing? And we don't, it's kind of, we did it in a way too, because we, all the minis that are out there, we love minis and terrain and all that stuff. And it was really hard because a lot of it, we didn't know what it was we were buying. There weren't good review channels out when we started our channel. But we'll fill that niche. We'll show people the minis so they can see what the minis are before they spend their hard-earned money on them. Because a lot of them are in random booster boxes. And we finally got here to doing this. I think my first writing experience was through the RPG Writer Workshop.
Yes. So it's been rebranded under the Storytelling Collective by Ashley Warren. And it's called, they have like a Write Your First Encounter in a month now too. And then they also have a Write Your First Adventure in a month. And I think they target like 2,000 or 4,000 words. They really clamped down on the word count because there were too many people like me who would try to write 100 pages and not finish in a month. Cause who knew? But that's been fantastic. And we've been telling them that they need to approach Paizo and add a Pathfinder path, because they have like a D&D path, a Call of Cthulhu path, and then kind of just a generic OGL path. But they've been like Chaosium kind of worked with them to develop that line. And I think they're trying to build up their community content program as well. Ashley is just this incredible mind for like organizing work-life balance as well. Just like how to work better, not like make it a grind, not make it a hustle, and just very insightful, very good at uplifting folks' community as well. I think there's a lot of writers entering kind of the TTRPG world now that got their first start trying out that workshop and mm-hmm. realizing that, oh hey, yeah, like I can write too, and I can make my ideas into something and then put it out there and sell it, and people like it.
And you've now gone from taking the class to teaching in the class too, because talk about the layout that you did for Queer Finder, and now you're kind of teaching other people how to do something similar.
I'm one of the instructors currently, but my lesson is kind of just, we created a template, and we wanted it to be something that didn't distract from the lessons, because it's really about writing. Everybody, you know, wants to make sure that it looks cool, right? When you put it out, like that's part of that magic when you publish. And so, we created one that primarily for like Word, but also like a slightly lesser featured version for LibreOffice, so that there is a free open source option as well. Just it's lesser feature just because it has a different capability set than Word. But yeah, so there's kind of like, but it comes out with kind of, you know, the nice headers and a page background and formatting that's kind of fairly easy to use just by clicking the styles and things like that. And just to give somebody, the folks, something where, yeah, they can just copy paste their text in, click a few buttons and make it look like an RPG book. And very so, cool. And that's something that's very cool. And for me, like seeing people publish and seeing it in our template, like was super cool too and very gratifying. So that was very exciting.
And if anybody out there is watching who wants to, like, how do you get started in writing adventures or writing encounters? Like, that's the way to do it. Like, it is not so expensive. There's scholarships if you're also struggling with money, and it's very structured and will give you all the tools you need to be able to publish your own thing. And it's fantastic.
Yeah. And I'm really glad to hear that you got involved providing a layout template, because I think that's kind of underlooked how important that is in gaming right now, especially in the third party self-publishing. Because as much as we say don't judge a book by its cover, if your book looks sloppy, and it doesn't have to look amazing, if your book looks sloppy, then people are going to think you didn't care about anything else that's in the book either.
Yeah,
and I think unfortunately in some cases it does lead to a bit of a struggle. I think I've heard it described as an arms race on Twitter sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we're obviously contributing to that a bit with things like this, where we're spending maybe more than we should on some of these products. But that, yeah, like just the sheer improvements in kind of the quality of how a lot of these third-party products look has been, you know, phenomenal, but also I think a little intimidating for folks. I do think that, like you said, though, as long as it looks presentable, I think that good writing will still stand on its own. And I think that word of mouth and those, and that's why it's also very important to leave reviews on products.
Yes, that you please enjoy. Leave reviews.
Yeah. I definitely do want it to lean on that. I said, doesn't look sloppy. I mean, it doesn't have, is though it wouldn't hurt if every RPG looked as good as Queer Finder looks. I mean, that'd be great too. But speaking of success and looking good, you all have been top of the charts on Pathfinder Infinite. You all have managed to get the silver bestseller status. How do
In
you all
feel? In less than a week?
Yeah, it was fast. How do y'all feel about how this has been received? How it's been?
It's amazing. Like, you never really know how it's going to be received until you put it out there. Like, you can always hope or you can think, but like when that actually happens, it's always just kind of this moment that feels almost unreal. So yeah, no, we're so thankful and appreciative to the community, to the support we've gotten. Even just the folks like retweeting it. Like, I think like just that announcement for us was like by far our best performing tweet we've ever had on Twitter. Like, usually we're bad at Twitter. We're terrible at Twitter. And usually we tweet and we like lose followers. But so yeah, no, it's just been very encouraging as a creative too. Like, you know, like you don't even have to spend money on a product. Like, just sometimes just saying something nice or even liking something that a creator says, like, really means a lot. And so yeah, shit. All the support we've gotten.
Yeah, just seeing a couple people, like somebody did a little Twitch stream where they just flipped through it and gave feedback, and I just sat there. I think that was a time too where, you know, I don't think I'm alone, but like a lot of creators have their kind of ups and downs. And I think I was having kind of a down night, and I just got into bed and opened my phone and watched that fellow go through the issue. And I was kind of in my heart worried that he would, you know, find mistakes or not like things, but he was just effusive in praise, and I think that improved my mood 100% probably the next week, just hearing somebody watching through it and seeing it and they liked it. Just like, yeah, all that little feedback is just so great.
It's Dustin. He's a blogger for Dustin. He blogs for no Direction too, so
that's right. Yeah. Yes, Dustin's true.
And his Infinite reviews, which got picked up and hosted by Paizo, is some amazing stuff. And I'm glad to see Dustin throw attention at products like this, because they're awesome and need the attention.
Yeah, that was awesome. And I appreciate it so much.
I just want to point out how amazing the maps are. I didn't even do product that had a map, but looking through, there are all these really amazing, high quality professional maps. And it wasn't like, oh, here's a map on Map a Day that we threw in, you know, and credit. It's like, you know, everything's custom and everything is just so beautiful. How did you find cartographers? How'd that process work?
So I assume the maps you're talking about are done through Incarnate. Which is a tool set that's available out there. You can pay a I think a subscription to get licensed for the maps, right?
I think it's like $15 or $25 for an annual subscription, and that gives you commercial use. It's free if you're just using it for personal purposes. But yeah, so like in this particular, we are hiring cartographers for future issues. There are two really if you want to talk about. Because Theo's the one who made these particular. If you want to talk about that, I might.
You can go grab something?
Well, is it too late to send you graphics?
You can send them to me over on the Discord. I'll grab it.
Or you can do it on your phone. And so Incarnate is a great little tool set. And I think it was toward the end of the process of making the magazine. Grady came up to me. He's like, we need maps. And I'm like, and he's like, I got an Amazon subscription to Incarnate Go. And I'm like, and like, here are the descriptions of the rooms. And I was like, I have to learn how to use this. And so I just spent half a day like finding YouTube tutorials and trying to figure out how to use the software. And that's what I was able to make after like literally half a day learning the software. Like the software is so good. And like being able to
look really good.
Thank you so much. But yeah, it's all that software. And so if you're looking to make some maps for whatever, like just even your home games, like you can do some awesome stuff in there that you can then export and use on your virtual tabletops or what have you. And they look phenomenal. And the lighting effects, I think, are what really do it. You can put layers of lights on different color lights. We have like an underground cobalt dance club next to a bathhouse down there. And I was really proud of that one with like these kind of glowing trees all around. And so, yeah, it's I appreciate that. It was a lot of fun to make them too. I kind of enjoyed that part of the process.
And as much as like Incarnate is great, it still takes a bit of talent to make something great in Incarnate. So do not diminish the work you did on this. They look great, and it's because you were a talented person was using a good tool.
Well, thank you. And I will say that some people that I was given a like drawing of the map itself, so that some credit goes to them too for the layout and the things they designed too.
Yeah,
so
Allison, the author for that article, was that they just when they submitted their first draft, there was like all three floors done in like paint.
Wow.
Sent to me. I was like, okay, you are that is the gauntlet has been thrown out. I guess we have to do maps now.
So what are we looking at?
That doesn't surprise me. They're very professional. So if they're doing a place that has like it's a location, they're gonna give you a map, because that's what we've been trained to do by our Paizo masters, is to always draw a map out and send it with the turnover.
And seeing those original maps that you all put together, I love seeing them, because it's like, oh, this is really awesome MS Paint work, and it turned into something glorious later.
Yeah, that was great. It's scale and everything. But yeah, so we have pulled up here. This is a preview of issue two. We got Saga McKenzie was one of the first cartographers that we brought on board. So this is for the party barge. This is supposed to be a femme only pirate ship bar.
Where's the picture from the characters? Did you send that as well?
Oh no. Okay, that's
sorry. This is in and around Absalom.
Yeah, this is sailing in the harbor. It just sails circles in the harbor because it's just a party barge.
Oh my gosh. To be appearing in the future on Vellum and Lace, I'll work it in. I don't know how, but that has to be.
Yeah, sure. And so, yeah, and like, you know, you saw like they have like all these amazing like side art for on top of the maps and things like that. And they've just like, so we got to work with Saga on Uncaged, which is a whole other anthology project that we can dive into if you want, but we don't have to. But yeah, like she just made the most amazing maps. And so we were like, yes. That's the first place that on my mind went when I was like, okay, we need a custom cartographer to kind of who's really talented to try to design some of these places too. Because these are for articles that I wrote, and I am not trained by Paizo to provide to work in MS Paint. I had no idea what to do. I was just like, can you draw a boat and put things on it? And I think we sent you another one too. Sorry to.
No worries.
That's called Little Dragons, which is the name that Theo came up with, and it's Little Dragon.
Oh, so it's a cobalt dragon. This is now the favorite thing I've ever seen.
So that has links back to the Cobalt Discotheque in Lodovico Street in that article by Allison. So we're gonna have like them like hire the cobalt from their article to come and do pyrotechnics in this dance club drag bar that was independently created. It said, "Great minds think alike. Everybody loves kobolds and fireworks."
Yes.
And neon colors. But
it matches our background here.
Yeah. And this was the layout. Saga kind of helped us design what a club would look like too. And I was like, "Oh, can you make it like a wheel with like 50 bars?" And they're like, "How about this?" And I was like, "Oh yeah,
dance floor.
That looks good.
The runway there for the shows. And yeah, I want to go there. I want to go."
Can I make a request for the maps in the future?
Please.
I would love to use some of these maps in my game. And, you know, if you happen to include a map file with the next Queer Finder download, so then I can throw them in my VTT.
Is that they were? Yes. So these are included as in a separate zip file.
Then I must have not downloaded it.
Because they show up as different files. So you have to remember to go into your library and look at all the files. Like when I first started that library system, I couldn't find any. Just be aware. I know.
Okay.
Or if they're not in there for some reason, let us know.
Let us know.
Because there's been some things we go in there and make changes and other things vanish.
Yeah.
So
we got feedback also that it would be good to have like some handouts. Like we had some neat world menus for the different locations to like provide those separately as well. So we're going to be adding that on our next update as well. So yeah, we're trying to make it as VTT friendly as possible. And again, yeah, if there is feedback on like, "Oh, this didn't load correctly," or something like that. We're trying to provide like gridded and ungridded versions as well, because I know different folks prefer like the scales and things like that. But as always, feedback. Yeah, like anything that we can do to improve it.
And speaking of the future and improving, this is what can we expect from issue 2, and is there going to be an issue 3?
So currently, So issue 2 is a continuation, but we've onboarded some additional folks who we tried to steer them to issue 3, and they were like, "No, we love Absalom." So, for example, like Anne Richmond worked with Glass Cannon podcast is going to be contributing a festival / kind of location for Desna in issue 2. And then there's going to be a lot of there's so much stuff.
Satine Phoenix has her what is her shop?
It's called A Flame and Fire, and it's a boutique clothing shop where all the clothing comes with stats and things like that.
We wanted to have kind of her persona in there as the NPC selling the wares. And she said, "Well, I don't want it to be me. I want it to be the love child of me and Cher." And so we have the love child of Satine Phoenix and Cher is going to be that NPC in that particular location. But we started getting some art in on that, some sketches, and that looks exciting very much to me too.
Yeah, and then we've got a lot of other Paizo freelancers too, like Michelle Jones is reading an article expanding on the Zonzon doll tradition for Crystal.
Oh my goodness.
Oh, I love that one so much.
Yeah, it's so heartwarming and slightly creepy, but heartwarming too.
All the best heartwarming things are a little bit creepy.
Yeah, and then I'm contributing kind of like an ace arrow fortune teller who ironically helps other people find love.
Sweet.
Yeah, no, it's a cool idea. I am not representing it in the way it should be in all its glory. But we got a lot of stuff. And issue 3, we're trying to kind of keep a little pace with Paizo, even though no one can really keep pace with your release schedule. No offense.
There are just the two of us for the
beginning. We're trying to review your products, and we're 5 months behind, and we're doing one-hour video where we try to briefly touch on everything that's come out in the last 5 months.
I'm pretty sure we have books by both of you that we're going to be talking about in the next video we're making.
Issue 3 will be Alkenstar.
Speaking of Vanessa.
Oh, very cool.
The Alcazar. So we want to kind of, piggyback on your talent and show some other sides of Alkenstar.
Very cool.
Which I think will be a fun, after Absalom, just a whole different kind of vibe. It could be a lot of fun.
We're hearing a lot of talk about cowgirls.
Yes.
And this would be a good time to remind everybody that we record each of these episodes live in front of a Twitch audience and also now a YouTube audience. So if you are watching this live, feel free to get your questions and comments into the chat, and we'll be picking those out throughout the show. We've actually already snagged a couple. But if you could, you got any questions for us or for Grady or Theo or anything about Queer Finder or Gallant Goblin or those really cute kobold plushies, do let us know. Wait, you've got, you have a Kobold plushie?
Kobold plushie, yeah!
He's got his little hedgehog down here.
You need full screen Kobold plushie.
That is adorable.
Oh, I have to buy
it. We are bringing these to Kickstarter sometime later on down the line. Koboldplush.com if you're interested. And we have, we love them. They're all kind of interchangeable. You can kind of take their stuff off and give them around to the other ones and change our clothes. It's always got a little crossbow you can just take off and put somewhere else if you want to. So, yeah, we're looking forward to this. We like cute stuff over here at the Gallant Goblin. Oh, our bard is so cute.
Aww.
Our bard with a little harp. Switch out the instrument to a little scarf. Little kind of reminds me of the scarf from Rent in a way.
Oh, honestly, yes. I thought it was the Fourth Doctor when I saw it.
Oh, yeah. A little combination of... what's that actor's name? Discovery? Rapp. Anthony Rapp. Yeah, well, Anthony Rapp. Not endorsed by Anthony Rapp, obviously, but an Anthony Rapp. So, yeah.
Fletching. Adorable.
Thank you.
So, is there any possibility of you doing anything outside of Queer Finder? I mean, Infinite has a lot of possibilities. You mentioned working on adventures and kind of working on you know, teaching people. Would there be a possibility that you bring on people's adventures or do your own adventures and release them on Infinite as well in the future? Or is everything just kind of right now, at least focused on Queer Finder for the immediate future?
It is definitely focused on Queer Finder and Queer Finder adjacent products right now. I think
we do have other things coming out. Like we have an adventure, I think it might've just launched today for a new game called Vast Grim. I don't know if he put that out there or not yet.
I think it's only for the backers right now too or something, but
like a horror and space adventure that that Grady wrote that came out today. We have some adventures for the goddesses book of Yevron Case.
Luis was asking
about Pathfinder. So I was like, we do other things.
Anything is great. Yeah.
I kind of want to do, if we ever get around to a chance to, I'd love to do like a Queer Finder in Starfinder. Set on
Queerfinder in space.
Yes, I mean that's my dream because I love Starfinder so much. I'd love to do that, but yeah, I mean, I have to try to encourage us not to take on too much. I think that's one problem that we've run into is we try to do too much, and it ends up working from morning to night, not knowing, working at home too, and Grady has a full time other job.
What?
And so yeah. So kind of managing that and everything else, like we would love to, as if we can just, we complete one thing and we'll start something new.
Yeah, but yeah, I see the comments, like someone's like, oh yeah, a few locations in Queer Finder, hit those in an adventure path. And yeah, that's something that we would love to do. I know that Micah in the chat and I have been talking about maybe doing some fiction around one of the characters from the Absalom book named Feldus Chold. We may have already created a Twitter account for him, but it was just like, there's just this one short entry in the NPC section about like, he's the most incompetent thief in Absalom, but he has all these grandiose ambitions, but never gets around to them. And like, we were just like, oh, he's the poster child for ADHD. And having ADHD ourselves, we were like, we feel that a lot. And so like, we kind of just want to do like kind of his misadventure where like all sorts of bad things happen, but then he accidentally like unluckily stumbles into more and more influence and power and the problems that come with that. So that's another thing that we're looking at. But yeah, we're trying to balance our ambitions with
well, not that you need one more thing on your plate, but I have a very important question, I think. When are we going to see Queer Finder merch? I want a t-shirt. I want a dress. I want, what am I going to get? What am I going to get?
We could do the Queer Finder merch probably this weekend.
Yeah. So yeah, we're hoping to launch, right now we grabbed queerfinder.org. .com is taken by a German massage parlor.
And the Twitter handle.
But, but we feel like .org is still, like, we know we had some concerns about, like, oh, is that set you up as, like, a nonprofit? Or is that, like, misleading?
No,
but we're like, yeah, but we're also, like, I think it is good. We are trying to make it an org. Like, I think we're hopefully trying to make it a somewhat community-oriented website. We're still looking into how to build that. And also, like, you know, some legal things, like, about not wanting to be responsible for some of the content on there. Like, you know, like, some social media. You know, like, where we have to balance that. But yeah, we're hoping to launch that. And one of the things that we'll launch with that site soon is going to be some merch as well. And I think that we will be able to at least do some kind of like the print on demand kind of shirts and things like that. Like you can, we also have like our own embroidered like polo and a Cobalt Investigator.
We did Cobalt versions of all the like different classes and all the different games as my investigator.
Oh my That's currently on our homepage, gallantgoblin.com/shop. But Queerfinder will have its own store, hopefully. And then
Excellent.
In terms of actual merchandise, we're hoping to take the logo that the Q Wayfinder that's part of the issue and turn it into an actual pin. And so we're currently getting a prototype made of that. It's about 3 inches wide, so it's going to be quite a substantial thing.
Very cool.
And it's like a three-layered pin, and so the Q is going to be in the middle, and it's hopefully supposed to be kind of spinnable, but still it'll like lock in place on wherever you spin it. And so it's supposed to be kind of like a compass, right? So the idea of it being able to spin, being able to kind of see the different rainbow colors behind it. And then also down the line, we're hoping to be able to do more stat blocks for that, the way like the Pathfinder Society's Wayfinder
can be upon. Yeah, the silver one and all those special ones.
And to do something like that too, where like when you turn it, it has a different.
And it also, because it has kind of the rainbow underneath of it. So when you turn it, you know, there's a lot of different queer pride flags and colors. And so you can kind of turn it to maybe represent what you want to represent that particular day or that particular hour. And so I thought that would be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not tricky, comprehensive.
Yeah.
But it has a fair amount of colors too.
Because there's some overlap in the colors. You can kind of get something like that. So that's coming really online. Cool. And somebody there in the chat had the best idea yet, a swimsuit calendar.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the
plan. Oh, yeah?
I didn't see the flamethrower yet, but I love the idea of the swimsuit calendar.
Micah has plenty of experience doing calendars. I think he just fulfilled one Kickstarter for his own 2022 calendar. I think Coffeehouse Hunks was his theme. And so we're trying to get him to do, the exact theme be a surprise for when? he may have something to work.
Oh, I love the idea of the lunchbox.
Queer Finder, the lunchbox.
Yeah. But you all sent me an image to show off. Are you ready to throw that up on screen?
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know. Is it what I think it is?
I think it's Pam.
We'll find out.
No one knows but
Pam. It's not. So it's a clip from Marty Mrs. Choke. Oh, there it is.
What's the art? Yeah.
Yeah, that's our Queerfinder Wayfinder.
Yeah, because there's a Queerfinder Society now in the issue as well, and not competing with the Pathfinder Society in any way.
They're just trying to help people find safe spaces, trying to help them self-actualize their true selves, and that kind of thing. Right.
You sent me this image, and you sent me several others. So what? Let me cue some of those up, and you tell me what on earth these are.
Name that image.
There's this 3D image.
Oh, that's the...
These are the 3D mock-ups for the mold.
Oh, okay.
Kind of showing the in-progress version of making the real-life pen.
Yeah, like the different layers that it'll have. And then it'll be kind of assembled together and in color.
Is it the same company that's doing our other pens too, correct?
Yeah.
Because, we
got to work with them a little bit on, again, for preparing for our Cobalt Plushie Kickstarter. They made pen versions of the six kobolds. Originally this was the color kobolds was supposed to be like it was like the six color in a row on a shirt. And so they started as a shirt design, which is on our store. People responded well to that as well. It was kind of our first pride, the first year we were in business, our kind of our pride design celebration. They made these pins for us, and we were very happy with the quality. We were recommended by Brian Collin of Infinite Black, who's running the Vast Grim project. And so these are the same folks who will be making the pin. And so we have we feel like they make very high quality products. They also made a Goblin Gold coin for us.
We use this in place of hero points in our game. We call them Goblin Gold.
So they're like the tokens.
This is something that you could murder somebody with if you wanted to. This thing is so heavy.
Yeah, it looks pretty beefy.
Yeah, but it's got our little mascot on it with some pigs, because all goblins like pigs. Little piggies.
Yep.
and
so do we.
Yeah, and then the Goblin Gold and for Gallant Goblin on the back.
And for good game.
We were very impressed by kind of how the mold and the way they did this. And it's heavy. Yeah, it's heavy.
So we are
infomercials.
Yeah, we don't need to just be chilling our stuff the whole time.
So we are coming up on time for the interview. Do you all have anything else you'd like to shout out to, or get any attention to, or make sure our audience knows about?
I mean, our main home is on YouTube, where we're the Gallant Goblin, and like I said, we do review minis and adventures and everything TTRPG. So that's kind of our home base, and you know, we're also on Twitter, where we share a lot of what we're doing, and we have a Discord channel, which is a really nice community, a very welcoming, warm community, a diverse group of people. We'd love to have everybody just come and hang out with us there. You can find the links on any of our YouTube videos to come and join our Discord community. I don't know, is there anything else you want to?
No, and just that, yeah, like, you know, we appreciate the support for QueerFinder, and QueerFinder.org hopefully will be up, and we're really going to try to make an effort to really showcase our contributors and our community and kind of open that up a bit. And anything you buy on Pathfinder Infinite, on any of the merch, like, the intention is that all profits from that are going to funnel right back into the products. We're hoping to be very transparent about all of it. We'll probably have trackers on the side kind of showing like how much we've made from different sources and then how much it costs to produce various things. And so we're hoping to kind of make this a sustainable thing so we can keep supporting our existing team and bring more folks on. And
including Luis.
And so, yeah, just we really appreciate that, and thank you for having us here as well.
Well, we will be right back after this special word from our sponsor.
I'm Stan, that weird game designer cartoonist guy with the exclamation point on his name, but that's not important right now. I'm here to tell you about my latest Kickstarter project, Bugbear PI. It's a hard-boiled urban fantasy detective story that'll be serialized and delivered in 10 chapters, and I mean delivered the old-fashioned way. Each episode comes in the form of a chapter card sent to you through the U.S. Post Office, so you'll have something better than just bills and ads in your mailbox. A chapter card is like a greeting card, except instead of a cheesy little saying, it has a full-color illustration and the next segment of the tale told in nail-biting flash fiction. The Kickstarter ends on February 15th, so don't just sit there twiddling your thumbs. Check it out for yourself at www.newstanproject.com. That's www.newstanproject.com. And tell me I sent you. You know what I mean.
Pathfinder News! Pathfinder News! Pathfinder News! Pathfinder News!
In the Pathfinder News segment, we talk about what is new and happening in the Pathfinder and associated universes. And this week we have something that makes me so happy. Luis, you made me so happy today. I've been begging for this book ever since James Jacobs came on the show and hinted that he'd like to do it one day. And I don't know who's involved in this. I just got to see the cover. But Luis Loza, tell us about this wonderful, amazing, dream-fulfilling book that just got announced for the fall.
Param, last time we did Pathfinder News, you asked me if there were any other news that you could think of. And I said, I don't know, check back in with me in 2 weeks. And yes. Wouldn't you know it, here we are, where I can finally talk about the Lost Omens Travel Guide, which is the next book in the Lost Omens book line, right after the Knights of Lastwall book. This book is, as you've talked about before, something that started originally as the Almanac in-house. It's a thing, actually, I wanted to do. And wouldn't you know it, once I pitch it to people, James Jacobs says, oh, that's that thing. That's that thing we wanted to do forever. And in my head, it's the guide to everything that someone who isn't an adventurer would know about life in the Inner Sea and life in Galarian. So it covers everything that is things like daily life, like your everyday life schedule, the kind of clothes people wear in rural settings, the kind of clothes people wear in urban settings. Talks about foods, different festivals. It talks about the animals of the world and weather, and it talks about you know, just so much. It has like dabbles a little bit in sports and pastimes, like the kind of games that kids play to pass the time and stuff like that. So it's a little bit of everything. It unfortunately isn't an in-depth look at all of these subjects because there's only so much page count, but it's like a kind of a cursory glance at a lot of the important information that I think will help players really flesh out their characters and understand what they know about the world and or what they should know about the stuff around them. You know, if you come from Absalom, what kind of cuisine are you expecting? If you come from Garun, what kind of sports are people playing, or what kind of stories are people telling? And will be a lot of fun stuff. It's probably our most lore-ish book yet, the heaviest lore, but I think it's all really fun. It's all very presented as in, wouldn't you know it, before Queerfinder beat us to the punch. It's a, it's an in-setting guide to all of this material with in-setting, like it's written as if they're articles from authors that travel the Inner Sea and are like, oh, we went to the Inner Sea to learn about what people are like in the Inner Sea and wrote this book called The Travel Guide, so you can come to the Inner Sea and know what to expect and what kind of things to look for. And it's super fun, very flavorful, and I'm really excited for people to see more in the coming months.
I run so many of my games at the small scale, at the street level. That's like my longest running Pathfinder game's been going on for 12 years. They're level 8, and they do because they are, you know, focused on like street level community building, and that's sort of where their fun is, and how we enjoy playing that game. And books like this, and before this, the Tales line was kind of having to carry a lot of this, let you understand what the world is like, what your characters would care about, or in just even, and this was so hard to get content like this before, because the traditional pre-Pathfinder and early Pathfinder way of presenting RPG material was very segmented and focused on the combat adventures with very little going into the life beyond the novels themselves, which is why I love the novel line so much. And even when you're running like Rise of the Rune Lords and World Saving or Age of Ashes and like epic beyond epic, I find that if the players aren't invested in the world in some way, they care less about saving it. Mm-hmm. And so even then, a book like this just like let you understand like why anybody would give a crap about Galarian not becoming a giant wasteland is super important. And so I think this is an important book for GMs, especially if it'll be an important book for players, assuming you don't, you know, drop the ball, Louise, and make a terrible Lost Omens project, you know, with the track line you had of absolutely nothing but slam dunks for entire line's lifespan. Oh my gosh, I'm so happy for this book. It's everything I've wished for years. And what's the page count we're looking at?
It's 128. It's the shorter end of a Lost Omens. But we try to pack as much as we can. This is one where we really went into interesting territories with the layout and the art. If you're reading a Pathfinder book, you know, you're kind of used to, you know, every other page has an art piece and stuff like that. But this time we were really inspired, or at least I was inspired, and you know, I was kind of in charge of things, so I got to say how things went. But I was inspired by the Eyewitness books and other books like that from when I was a kid. Like I imagine the like Star Wars guides to like the various ships where they have the cutaways and they point to specific things like the engine blah blah blah. So there's a lot of info in the form of images. There's lots of people that are just kind of dressed up in everyday life, and then things pointing at them that says, oh, they have these boots because this and that, and they wear a hat because of blah blah blah, and a lot of people go fishing when they go and eat their lunch, they have and it just has lots of little captions to give you a lot of little details all over that would cover things that you wouldn't really get into. It's a lot of minutia that normally you wouldn't cover when talking about a city or something, when writing a city gazetteer. You'd be like, oh, well, you talk about the bar and the secret tunnels that it has for the, but here you would talk about the kind of food they serve and the patrons that come here and the clothes that they wear and all that stuff. So I'm really excited for it.
They have a little entertainment every Moonday night.
So you're telling me your average Galarian citizen doesn't wear full plate all day every day and earn their 9-to-5 living in the kobold mine slaying monsters?
No, not since a big change in labor in 4618. But yeah, it's interesting. I'm really excited to see how people receive it. Personally, I feel that each of the sections, you know, cuisine and fashion and pastimes, could probably be their own book on their own.
Sure.
and I have lots of ideas of how those could become their own books if this does well enough. And I'm sure if this does very well, we can convince some people to, I don't know, expand the cuisine section into a full cookbook or something. So
this is already threatening to be a 3-hour breakdown episode when I get my hands off
the
thing.
Oh, it will be. Well, I was just thinking, Haram, you were talking about how important it is to like have all these little details of the day-to-day life. And that reminds me of like when Pathfinder First Edition organized play was happening, there was an item called Old Law Whiskey. And it was one of the few like named bottled beverages, right? Or whatever that you'd see. And so many characters are like, it's Old Law Whiskey. And then so authors would put it in the things and it just became like Old Law Whiskey is now part of the world. We don't know where it's bottled. We don't know where it's from, but it's definitely there. Things like that just ground you in the world so much. So having those touchstones to work on and be like, oh, well, you know, I'm from Galt and this is the kind of food we eat. And this is what's really important. Here's how I didn't die from the Grey Wardens. Anyway, but it helps you feel like your character is part of the world and not just something that is going to, you know, like Perrin was saying, going to go slay unruly sewer monsters for a living.
And Grady and Theo, the reason you all weren't, you know, booted from the episode like we usually do our guests is, as fellow content connoisseurs, what do you think about this announcement so far?
I really think that books like this are what make Pathfinder better than the competition. Like, having all this lore to, just as y'all were both talking about, ground your game into a real world that your players will care about. Like, I love sitting down with all these Lost Omens books and reading through them. And I think that I wish all the game systems out there could do what y'all do with. And also, that is the most beautiful cover of any book y'all have come out with so far. I just think that's gorgeous. And so I'm super excited.
Yeah, and if you go into our Discord, you'll see we've been proselytizing this for a while now. But yeah, like one example is just that, like, in 5e, like, we know so many paladins and clerics who not only can't name their god, they may not have picked one in their own character creation. And then we like showed some of our players Gods and Magic, and they were flipping through it. And then like 5 minutes later, they had converted to become Cata Knights.
And they were, like, of course, obviously.
Making up like sayings that they could use that would reflect their religion and like how that would influence the way they behaved and how what their characters would want. And we're just like, yeah, because like you gave them a hook in there and the details they need to make this something that feels like a lived-in world.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be so great for players who are going to be able to make their character feel so much more alive and part of the world. And I think that's amazing. I can't wait to get my hands on it.
We've got a question from Dungeon Novice. Louise, you might be able to answer this one. Is the top half the Swallowtail Festival?
Sure is. We have your Swallowtail Festival, and we have City and Antambu in the lower left, and just one of the big old carvings in the Five Kings Mountains in the bottom right. The idea being, it's a travel guide. Here's all the pictures of cool spots you can go see.
I don't believe it. It's a Pathfinder book, and you put a dwarf thing on the cover. It doesn't track.
I am cool with dwarves, so it's fine with my books. Put a dwarf on the cover.
After
you know what?
12 years, the shorties are going to get their chance.
I'll get you a whole cover with just a dwarf on it someday. not just a third of it.
We'll no, last time cover. That happened was Dwarves of Galarian.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now I'm going to put an elf on the cover of that one.
Let's do it. Dwarves.
It wouldn't have surprised.
All dwarves all the time.
All right. So do we have any early idea of who's writing this one?
The product page has the list of all the wonderful authors for that, including... There's a product page for it. Let me throw the link.
No, here. That's fine. I'll find it. You talk.
No, I have it already.
Written by Rigby Bindell, Dana Ebert, Dustin Knight. Hey, Dustin! Aaron Lassino, Ron Lundeen, Stephanie Lundeen, and Nara Nadavid, Dave Nelson, Jessica Redekop, Nathan, help me.
Renicky,
Mikhail Raccoon, Aaron Roberts, Simone Salee, and Diego Valdez. That's a list of names I love, and also, full disclosure, a lot of people that are staff member direction. a lot of staff members of No Direction.
Quite a few.
Oh, confidence level of this book went way up.
Yeah. It's been fun watching you talk about, I'd love to see the almanac again, and just sitting here like, yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
Luis is over there sipping his tea.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start work on it?
Oh, this book has been in production for a while. I think it started... So actually, let me tell you real quick. This is a book that I had lots of ideas for. it's been kind of reshaping itself a lot over time. It's just too much content that I wanted to put into 128 pages, unfortunately. So there was a period where this was actually going to be on the schedule to come out last year, and we had to kick it down the road a year just to like get stuff in place and together, because it was hard to figure out what we wanted it to look like, what kind of content should go in there. This is not a book that's going to look like anything you've ever seen in the Lost Omens line before. There's obviously going to be pages where it's just like, oh, like here's two pages, here's a nice little picture of a gnome in the corner or whatever, like you're kind of used to. But then there's going to be different page layouts that are brand new stuff, like some of those cutaways that we mentioned. That's not anything we've really done before. So figuring out a lot of what that looked like and working with our art team and the rest of the people working on Pathfinder to figure out what kind of stuff can we even cram into this without blowing the book up into, you know, 600 pages or whatever, even though I think that'd be just fine, was a lot of work. So we kind of had to sideline it for a little bit. And I think this ended up becoming what came out. I think this ended up getting swapped out for Monsters and Myth or Grand Bazaar or something in that slot to do those books instead, to give us the time we needed to figure this out and put it on the schedule. So it's been being worked on for quite a while. And I'd say I think the writing on this started back in October, a little before August, September-ish area, around last fall. So yeah, just another secret that I always have to keep my tongue about, hold my tongue about when talking about anything Lost Omens.
We have Cassini Lorlock saying 2023 Lost Omens, no direction staff, just writing whatever. Wow. So yeah, I'm super hyped for this. I'm surprised this was a surprise. So good on you, Luis. Wow. Oh, awesome. So that's, we have another little bit of news. This one of the non-standard sort. Paizo now has a HR person. At last, Luis.
At last.
Help us.
Well, we have I think her official title is Director of People and Culture. Yes. But she's our HR person. Her name is Maggie Gallagher, and we're all excited to have her on board. She's got kind of a, from what I can tell, she's got a heck of a track record for working to push towards inclusivity just making things all the more progressive at places that she's worked at before. I haven't worked directly with her too much just yet. I'm lucky that I haven't needed to go to HR for anything at the moment. Though I probably could go bug her about like, oh, what about my 401k?
Sure, just ask about a 401k like you do.
Yeah, just the typical water cooler talk that you do. But yeah, we're very excited to have her on and excited to work with her in the future, and especially to see just how she helps Paizo in the future. I'm sure she's going to be doing great things. And, you know, just the first step of many towards improving Paizo as always.
And so one of the important reasons that this is important is that Paizo is not a small company and hasn't been for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And once you get to a certain size of company, not having someone in charge of, you know, just the people side of that company gets to be a little bit dangerous. And I've worked with bad HR people and I've worked with great HR people and everything in between, but I can tell you I've had way more horror stories in situations when a company needed to have an HR person and didn't than when they had one just about every single time. So and having an HR person on its surface, this is where I get into my yay pro labor hat gets put back on my head. So understand if Luis can't comment too much further on some of the things I'm saying is HR doesn't always mean great things for the employees, but I can tell you that not having an HR person in a big company is a lot more dangerous for employees than having one, because one of the things that HR people are supposed to do is to protect the company. That includes from terrible decisions from management that can get the company into really bad hot water, and not having an HR person means that those sorts of things can happen. And some of the things we heard about happening at Paizo, let's just say, I think might have gone better if there was somebody that just was like, wait a minute.
Let's think this one through.
Yeah. So this is obviously one of the first things we've seen since some of the issues that have come up earlier around Paizo and the Paizo accountability movement and the NAS Paizo movement. And I do not know what involvement the Paizo union has had in the addition of someone from HR to the ranks, but I am definitely hopeful to see more improvements and more directions towards stability and happy staff over at the Paizo crew.
And she also, from what I can tell, has a strong background in DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion. So I think that's going to be good as well. I know Pathfinder has been on this grand journey from maybe we should have some queer stuff to now a lot of the Lost Omens books and all sorts of stuff just has just tons of queer characters and in multiple types of representation. And so I think the products have gotten really good, and the freelancer pool is really diverse, but hopefully they'll help the actual staff members continue to become more diverse as they have in the past several years and just continue trending.
Right. And just from a fan perspective, like us being able to see ourselves reflected in the adventures is something that's kind of new in the industry, I feel like. And so seeing that good representation just makes us feel like we're welcome at the table. And so I know it's good for the company and the employees, but it's also good for the fans.
And for those of you listening that might not understand, hey, why are we talking about this? Because it doesn't seem like they're going to be involved in the creative side of the creation. I mean, they're almost certainly not going to be involved in the creative side of deciding what goes into a book. But having a workforce at Paizo that feels secure and safe and not abused and miserable at their jobs every single day means that we're going to get better books. Because I know that when I'm treated badly at a job, the thing I don't think about is, oh boy, how great of a job am I going to do for that boss that hates me? So if we want to continue to see wonderful, high-quality products come out of Paizo, we got to hope that the people at Paizo are taken care of.
You're here.
Yeah. All right. And that brings us to, we have one more thing. There's the
Kobold. Two more things.
Two more things.
So related. Yeah, one more thing that just came up, actually. So Nomad 18 reminded me that one of the things I wanted to talk about is United Paizo Workers on February 3rd said that they just had their first meeting with the Paizo leadership and that they quickly agreed to ground rules for negotiations and are looking forward to continuing discussions. So even though we know that collective bargaining can be kind of a slow beast to go, things are progressing, so that is good news. And it sounds like United Paizo Workers is excited about the direction things are going, so that is also good news.
And in lighter news, we have the level 20 game from Gale Force 9 for Pathfinder directly, but based off of Pathfinder, has officially been announced with a blog article and some nice pictures of what we might actually be doing. And to understand the theme of the level 20 board game, you are a kobold and just enough experience and you're worth just enough experience that these level 19 adventurers need you to get to 20. Survive.
And they show up and they're like, I need 5 experience to get to 20, and you're all worth 1 experience each, so I'm gonna hunt you down and kill you.
Oh no.
Param, you said it was a lighter note. What's going on?
In the spirit of cobalt murder is what you all do on a Saturday night? You know, actually this is kind of grim, and they got Shaylin on the
cover. It's a little grim.
It's like, oh, what? I've never seen this is like those horror games, like Dead by Daylight, but starring the Pathfinder crew. This is not a great concept. Oh, well.
You're going to get Valros going through slaughtering kobolds. I need to get to level 20. I want my capstone.
So it definitely should be fun, though. I'm expecting great things from Gale Force. They've done some games I've appreciated in the past. Like I said, they did Battlefield Star Galactica, one of the best games out for board games. It's definitely one of the best social deduction games and definitely fits the theme. And also in their past partnerships with Dungeons & Dragons, they produced some amazing concepts, some high-quality minis, some really cool tokens, the best GM screen you've ever seen. So I hope that this does well and partnerships with Gale Force continue to flourish, because they're one of the booths that when I used to go to conventions, I would make sure that I spent a lot of time at. And now I will have many Pathfinder shaped kobold Rizu. So
and it looks cooperative-ish. Like one of those we're all trying to survive, but maybe the way I survive is to push you in front of the adventure and run the other way. But it also looks like you could play it as, we are all going to survive. We're all going to stick together and get out of this. So I kind of like that. I really enjoy cooperative board games.
If I remember like Battlestar, that, you know, you think you're all on the same team, but maybe somebody is a Cylon.
Which one of these kobolds is secretly a mimic?
If I remember right, they put a link up to the rules somewhere. So you can actually start reading those rules now. And the way things play out is there's two ways to win. Either you manage to hurt the egos of the fighter that's coming to kill you enough that they just like, actually, I can't believe I'm getting, you know, schooled by these kobolds. I'm just going to leave. Or you manage to actually deal enough damage and be the last surviving kobold because, you know, they had just enough XP. There were six of you, but they only needed five XP. So they killed five of you and you were the last survivor.
Oh, geez.
So I think there's definitely either let's do cooperative, let's work together, let's push back against the fighter, or hey, I just need to outrun the other kobolds.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of the news sections. We will be right back shortly with wrap up and shout out.
Wrap ups and shout outs. Wrap ups and shout outs. Wrap ups. Wrap ups and shout outs.
And we're back. Welcome to the wrap-ups and shout-out section, where we like to shine a spotlight on the things that we very much enjoy that may or may not have to do with our Pathfinder and No Direction Awesome. So, and to continue into the tradition of the former host Costello, I want to throw a little bit of a spotlight on some of the stuff that's going on inside the network. Starting off with Presenting, who has Nicole Lindros as a podcast that went up on February 2nd. So that's exciting. Dustin Knight recently has continued his amazing series of, I'm trying to find it, darn it. I have lost the thing, but Dustin just did another set of rating the rule systems for Pathfinder, and I am going to find it. Where in the world is it? Fox is Cunning?
Fox is Cunning.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Sorry. Tracking the talismans. Talismans are something it's so new that I barely mess with them, and mainly because I don't know enough about them. So this article is automatic on the mean. My players are happy with more talismans. So yeah, go ahead.
I was going to shout out to this one, but you beat me to it because it was something I specifically asked for. I thought it existed already, but I was getting confused with the runes article. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, I can write it if you want. And it is so useful because talismans are cool. But if you can't remember what the weird name of the talisman did and like, oh, is that something I wanted? Because it's not the, you know, catch yourself if you fall talisman. It's like the iron spike or something. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. And so it's really hard to remember the names of them. And so just having that guide to go through and be like, what are all these things do again? Which ones did I want for my character? Are just very cool because they are a fantastic element of Pathfinder 2nd Edition. I think a lot of people just sort of look past and don't really consider, but they're really useful.
And they're for GMs, they're kind of a great little thing to just sprinkle in the treasure when you're rounding off the last few GP to add some flavorful options to the game. Though you might run the risk of players doing like they always do and just hoard all the consumables for later. But at least now they have the option. Definitely didn't have players hanging on to the dragon slinger arrow I gave them level 2 and all the way until the dragon boss monster of level 20. But hey, it can be a fun and exciting time when that happens.
And now Paizo has a little reference cards, including the talismans that you can just hand out at your table so they can have it right in front of them and play it when it's appropriate. And I love that too.
I love the return of the cards. When Paizo briefly announced, we're doing away with the Pathfinder cards, I was like, no!
I'm glad they're doing more.
Kitsune Warlock in chat, Dustin Knight of the network, says part 2 coming in 8 days. So awesome. Ooh, this series of ranking articles from Dustin are absolute must reads, so go check them out over on nodirectionpodcast.com.
And 8 days from now, by the way, is the 15th of February, if you're listening to this in your car or on your drive.
Something else network related I want to shout out to is we did it. We have the Essence 20 Episode 0 podcast had come out.
Fantastic.
Me and Ryan back in the saddle again. And we, it was the episode zero, so definitely we're looking for feedback on what you want to see. But it was very much what you expected, except for instead of Pathfinder, it was Power Rangers. And to link the universes together, we decided to build what if Snake Eyes was selected to be the next Power Ranger by the Morphing Grid? What would he look like? And we ended up with a Green Ranger build, which you can download on NoDirectionPodcast.com. And you can get the completed Snake Eyes build as the Green Ranger that we put together there, as well as find the episode, as well as Downshift for our patrons. Again, this less like after every episode of No Direction, we have the patrons' private sanctum after show, including after this episode, gang. So do hang out if you're one of our patrons. We will be doing an after show over in Discord. We did, and the patrons had helped pick the name, and so Upshift is the podcast and Downshift is the after show.
Very cool.
Anything you want to shout out to, V?
Just one thing. So Roll for Combat, it obviously has done RPG Superstar. All of the voting has finished for the second round that, or for the second year in a row, I should say, that Roll for Combat has been hosting RPG Superstar, and the judges have it. I'm one of them. So that's really exciting. But related to that, so just put a pin in that for a second. What I really wanted to shout out to is the amazing art that is showing up in these books, specifically all the other Battle Zoo books. So if you saw the first bestiary that came out from last year's RPG Superstar, really great stuff. Well, Stephen Glicker has just expanded this into, he's turning into a publisher is what he's doing. And he's publishing it all under this title, Battle Zoo. And I can't believe all the things I'm seeing. The art is beautiful. I got to see a bunch of these like dragons from the upcoming Dragon's Ancestry book. And I am just blown away. Right. It looks so cool to play a little like not a dragonkin, not a kobold, an actual dragon adventure.
Right.
It's just cool.
Got Mark Sitcher involved with it full time now, I think, right?
Yes, yeah, Mark Seifter is working full-time.
Yeah. When that was announced, we arranged for a special interview with Mark Seifter that's worth checking out. If you haven't yet, go back into the previous episode. As a No Direction special, we spend about an hour or so chatting with Mark and Stephen about the moving, and we show off lots of the art of the dragon ancestries. My favorite, of course, is Sir Dragon Investigator PhD. That's amazing, and I like the idea of that. And I am hype with a lot of the stuff they've told us they're working on and a lot of the stuff that I am hoping to get to play with. So yeah, they're doing some amazing things. It's an example of a team that works really great together, deciding to continue to do work together and also being supported by someone willing to actually get a good team together and make sure they have the funding they need. Luis, anything to shout out to?
I think I'm going to toot my own horn here just a little bit and say, hey, Valiant is back.
Yay!
We had a break during the holidays where I couldn't edit episodes because I was I misremembered what files I had saved on my external hard drive, so I couldn't bring them with me on my holidays. But yeah, Valiant is back. If you don't know Valiant, it's the first 2E actual play on No Direction. I don't know if we've had more since then other than one shots.
Adventurous just one shot so far.
Yeah, I think Adventurous is going to E though, right?
Maybe. Yes, Adventurous is returning. It is going to E. We recorded several episodes of it recently.
So I was the first. and it's set in a little place called Arcadia. And it includes the wonderful likes of people you might have heard of, like Owen Casey Stevens and Rob Pontius of No Direction, and of course other things, I'm sure. And of course, we also have Avi, who's an editor at Paizo, and Jessica Redicop, who's a freelancer. Great team, people. Just a fun show. It's all Wild West themed. Got guns and grit and magic and fun stuff going on there. So check that show out if you haven't. And then the other thing I wanted to shout out to, it's tonight's the night where we shout out to Dustin over and over and over again.
Oh no.
Because I wanted to bring attention to all the great work he's doing with his Infinite Reviews. If you hop over to twitch.tv/KitsuneWarlock, or I guess if you have the official Paizo Twitch as well, you can view him through there. He's hosted on there on Fridays where he talks about all the great stuff on Pathfinder Infinite. There's just so much stuff on there, and the fact that he's willing to take the time to talk about that, give his opinion on all of those is just, it's amazing. It's a real service to the community to be, to have someone like him doing stuff like that.
And made my week for sure.
Yeah.
My last shout out is going to be also to something a little bit selfish, but hey, if you're interested in miniatures or 3D printing, I do another podcast called Print Your Games, which is all about 3D printing for RPGs, war games, tabletop games, board games, technically card games, if I can find some cool things to print for card games, and anything going. We just did an interview with Titanforge, one of the absolute behemoths in the 3D printing space. Slavik, who is the CEO and creative director, came on the show and just gave us like a full hour and a half of just amazing concepts of how Titanforge works, how they do their art, what goes into being a company in 3D printing space. A must listen to episode. And tomorrow we're doing another live episode where we're going to talk all about bases, because bases are surprisingly difficult to print, and you need to, and knowing enough about, also I'm going to be providing lots of links to some of the best free ones out there, as well as some of the best paid ones. So that'll be tomorrow's episode. But hey, go check it out. I really like this podcast, and I'm doing it with Kristen from Lost Spheres, and it's a great time. All right.
Yeah, one more selfish one. Yes. So I should mention, last episode we talked about Vellum and Lace almost having their third issue. That has been out now for 2 weeks, and it's pretty good. So I'm pretty happy with it. It's called The Wounded Woman, and they go to a bar. And if you know Pathfinder Society lore, you probably can guess which one. And there's plenty of Pathfinder Society in jokes and fun stuff happening there. It's a pretty intense episode, but it's out. And I just read episode 4 today. So Helen was the primary writer on 4, and it's really good. So I think so. If you like the Tales line and you're very sad that there's no more Pathfinder fiction out there, no new stuff, this is new stuff. And it's out there on Pathfinder Infinite. Just search for Vellum and Lace and you'll see 4 total episodes. So 3 episodes plus an episode 0 prologue. And you should check it out. They're pretty inexpensive, about $2 per episode. And about 2 chapters worth of material if you were thinking about how long a novel per episode that is.
Grady and Theo, anything you want to shout out to before we call tonight?
The one thing that came to mind is we recently came back from Dallas, where we got to see Glass Cannon live. And that was our first time going to any of their shows. And we had a wonderful time, and we got to meet the cast afterward at their little after party. And we forced them to look at Queer Finder. and they couldn't have been nicer. Troy LaValle especially was super kind and supportive of it. They pointed us to Simone, who is going to contribute to a future issue. I think you'll know Simone. And so, yeah, they were speaking her up, and then she happened to contact us at the exact same moment. And so it was serendipitous. And so, yeah, that was a lovely experience for us. And we had a great time and got to meet some cool folks. Grady James.
Just that, well, I see Dustin mentioned it in chat already, but yeah, just that, you know, I saw that Luis put out a new Pathfinder Infinite product for Arcadia. And so that was something I was kind of really excited to pick up and dig into soon. Does that feature in your show?
Yeah, the city of Altamira is the main hub in the podcast, in the show. I wrote like a bunch of details on the city in advance of starting the game, and you know, send it out to the players. Like, oh, here's where you live, here's places you can visit, NPCs you can know. And eventually, you know, once Infinite became a thing, I'm like, oh, I can just kind of spruce these up a bit, these notes I have, and put them together, flesh them out a bit, and put them on Infinite. And now you can also, you too can play Valiant at home.
Yeah, as audience members, I love when shows do that and just kind of make that their teeth into it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, if you want even more awesome content, you can find our mini shows and blogs, such as The Return of Valiant. Thank you, Luis, for bringing that show back and continuing to GM awesomeness. And for those of you who understand, Valiant is an original venture set in Arcadia, run by Luis Loza, who loves Arcadia so much. and it is an absolute treat. You need to go check it out if you haven't already. It's a wonderful show to catch up on, as well as our many other blogs, podcasts, and other material. You can find that over at nodirectionpodcast.com. And none of this would be possible without the support of our patrons, which we appreciate extremely. Without that, we would not have been able to grow the shows, grow the network, and continue to produce the content for free for you all. And if you are indeed a patron, do not miss out on joining us after this show for the Private Sanctum After Party. It's the one podcast we do where you get to tell us what to talk about. We love work talking with our fans on that show. It is absolutely one of my favorite things to do each and every week over there. And if you're not a patron yet, you can find the Patreon link over at nodirectionpodcast.com. Make sure you link it with your Discord account, and then you can just hop onto the Discord to the Patreon section after the shows that have after parties and just, you know, hang out with us, chat with us, and just have a great time. You can again find that over at patreon.com/nodirection or at nodirectionpodcast.com. So until next time, I'm Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Baron.
I'm Vanessa Hoskins.
I'm Luis Loza.
And if you want to find the path, you need no direction.